I tagged you on my new favorite song.
You did.
I love that song. I love it even more. Just to see Arnold Schwarzenegger sing I Want to Dance with Someone is fantastic.
I would like to thank you for putting that in my brain.
You're welcome.
All right, Brent, do you have a fantastic intro? Because that's your thing.
I have a decent intro. I kept working on it, but
did you overthink it?
Well, he's very dynamic, so it's really hard to write something concise about Sir James. So this is what I came up with. You right. Be the judge.
You go.
All right. Out of Salem, Oregon, this band has released 834 albums. With original songs borrowing inspiration from folk, punk, metal, and experimental noise. Along with songwriting, the leader of this band is an educator and author. Welcome, Sir James of Masonic Block.
Wow, that was quite the intro. Thank you.
That was really good.
That was really good.
Only took 45 edits.
So,
I'm ready to get into it, man.
Well, then launch. Then okay. Launch.
I've got the first question for you, Sir James.
Okay.
As I said in the terrific intro, you have a plethora of things that you engage in. Have you noticed any crossover from your fans being educators, band, or book-wise? Is there a big crossover, or is it like really separate? What's that fan base look like?
Fan base is all kinds of people, all stripes. I have noticed the more that I've been doing the history professor thing that I've come across a lot of other people who are in higher ed that are also musicians. And I wasn't necessarily expecting that, but there is a certain level of sort of a misfit attitude among certain types that lends itself to sort of a punk rock attitude. In fact, the most recent fellow history professor I just came across that I met last week, I guess lectured to his class. And turns out he is also a guitar player and has a band and all this kind of stuff. So I'm continuing to find similarities there. And in fact, I don't know if either of you are familiar with like the 80s era. They're still around, but they're really associated with the 80s, like electronic, kind of electronic pop kind of stuff, Information Society. But actually their bass player is a professor at another college about a half hour from where I'm sitting right now, and he and I have talked, and his name's James Cassidy. He's the bass player for Information Society, and kind of the same thing. I was surprised. If you remember that 80s song, it has the Leonard Nimoy, Pure Energy. Dun, dun.
Yeah.
Dun,
dun. Oh, I remember the name of the band.
Yeah. So it's always interesting to come across people like that.
Basically, your fan base is quite large. Is that what you're telling me?
Diverse. I don't know how hard it is. It's like four very different people.
And they don't talk to each other.
No.
They don't know they exist.
One only likes the early stuff. One only likes the recent stuff. You know, the other two likes all of it.
So I'm going to ask you before I ask the question, how do I pronounce the name? I'm going to butcher this. Garugahoo? No.
Oh.
All right. How do I pronounce that so I don't like butcher it?
No, that's fair. It's Giergahu.
Okay. So that's the first. Let's talk about Giergahu.
Sure.
That is an all music track. I really, really liked a lot of the sweet little guitar riffs in it. It had a great breakdown. What was the process behind that song?
I wanted to share that with you guys because that's a little bit of an exception to the rule. I so often write the songs entirely myself, and that was just a jam that me and my bandmates came up with one day on the fly during rehearsal. We literally had a fight about why am I writing all the songs, and in response I'm like, why don't you guys write any? And it was a bit of that, and things were feeling a bit stale. Things were going really well.
You're like shots fired.
A little bit, but I didn't know it was going to infuse the sort of inspiration for the music, but that's exactly what happened. We had I don't want to overstate it, but a little bit of a conflict during band practice. And I was just like, well, why don't we do what other bands do where we just jam and we come up with a song? Why don't we do that? And it's kind of like, well, that's not really how we tend to do things. And I came up with the bass line. I was playing bass at the moment. So I was like, well, I'm just going to start playing this, just jam. And that song came out of it in that session. And we kind of found, we let it go in whatever direction it wanted to go organically. It kind of like did this up and down thing. And after going through it a few times, it just kind of wrote itself between the three of us. You know, it's just guitar, bass, and drums. And it felt like we were very much on the same page of making something different and different for us and new. And it was great. So it's a special song because it was 100% collaborative. It wasn't me coming in and being like, I have this song and you're going to learn it. And things like that. It was really like everybody just sort of started playing. It was fantastic. And then not long after that, we were playing a club and they were like, you want us to record the set? And we're like, sure. And so that's the track. It was just at a little show we did. We didn't even know if it was going to make it to an album at any point, but we really liked it. So we ended up eventually releasing it.
I like this song. And I was really excited about hearing this song because with your stuff, I've always wondered, okay, how does he pull off 85,000 guitars live? You know, because you have a bunch of tracks, you know,
and oftentimes, yeah.
And it's really interesting. So at this point, especially if you're a three piece, which you were talking about earlier, you have to pick and choose. You just can't go, I'm going to play all the parts. You know, maybe for an octopus, you can do that. But you need to be an octopus with fingers. But we won't go into that right now. It was awesome.
Anybody who is stoned listening to this has just completely lost their minds. Go ahead.
Oh, man. That's funny. So it was awesome to hear it live. I really liked that. I thought it sounded good for live. I mean, you were able to get the crowd in there. Mm-hmm. I heard all the parts really well. I love the tone of the drums and the clear guitar part of this song was like crystal clear. So
it was really nice.
It was really good. And then the end, it got more aggressive towards the end. I really like that. So how recent is this recording? And would you speak about the process of preparing your band for a live show?
Well, that's two very different questions. So
yeah,
it's not a recent song. This made it onto, I think, the third album, and that's long time ago now. So we're talking somewhere early mid 2000s on the Fathom album, as it's called. And in terms of, what was your question about preparing live?
Yeah, because you've had a few versions of the band, right? Different versions.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So when you're transitioning to a new band, what does that process look like other than whining that you're the only songwriter?
Painful. Painful. And I'm not always the only songwriter. It's just that it's just often worked out that way. And some bandmates have been songwriters. They just haven't necessarily been as prolific or whatever. You know, there's that Pearl Jam 20 documentary, which I think is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And Eddie Vedder talks about anytime you change your drummer, it's like having a heart transplant. I think that's the perfect analogy. The drummer is always the most difficult person to replace, kind of regardless of talent, regardless of intellect. And, you know, there's all that stuff, too. But just the drums kind of are the heart of the band, especially when you play live. And that's the most difficult sort of part of it. But at that time, and really until relatively recently, having a good live aspect was always a priority, no matter how much we wanted, you know, the songs and the albums to sound good and stuff like that. It was always important to us that things sound good live. And even if there's going to be a difference between a studio version, maybe it's going to have more guitar overdubs and things like that, we always wanted it to be able to translate to being a little bit simpler live, but maintain its energy and maybe have a different sort of character. So that was always sort of a priority for us.
Brett, what was the second part of that question you asked that had nothing to do with the first part that was very different that you tried to sneak in on us? No, it's fine.
I just know that he has a pretty big arsenal of music. And so when you're condensing 384 albums down to, you know, 15 to 20 songs,
oh,
you know, that's got to be hard. And I was talking to, you know, just kind of asking, what's your process of getting a new band ready for that? And you said painful, and that you painful. That you don't like drummers.
Well,
no, Brent, that's just you, man. That's
in
just you,
in
man.
Some ways, I am a drummer. I actually started out on drums before I ever learned, kind of taught myself how to play guitar or write songs. I was a drummer first. Mm-hmm. I think that helps in the sense that I've always had a sort of innate sense of rhythm. I noticed that not all singer-songwriters do. Drummers are a weird bunch, though. They really, really are. They're, not to say that they're all the same, because they're definitely not. They're all just weird. They're weird in different ways. But yeah, that's always hard. Basically, I have to figure out, because I mean, I'll have a batch of songs that I want to play, but maybe it's a song that somebody in the band can't play. You know, maybe the time signature is too weird, or maybe there's a feel change that's just they can't quite grasp. And so I need to utilize the talents of the people I have around me and kind of pick the best songs that's appropriate for who I'm playing with. And I say this as somebody who's I'm not a technically proficient musician at all. I'm ridiculously sloppy in my writing and in my playing. So I'm not denigrating my bandmates whatsoever. Most of them are kind of beyond me in terms of technical ability. And that's what I benefit from, is that I associate myself with really good players who they might not write much, but where their talent is a high level of playing ability, which brings my abilities up. Because otherwise, right. Otherwise I'd be playing a G chord and nothing else.
Yeah. They make you look good. They make you look good. Yeah, totally. And who's all in the band now?
I have sort of, I think I put it this way before, it's sort of a revolving door of members, but I still have a core. I'd say that the two main guys over the past several years have been Martin Rush on bass and Matt Stevens on drums. I'm often the only guitar player when we play live. I don't want it to be that way. We haven't played in a while. Last time we played live, I made sure to have a lead guitar player. I'm not much of a lead player at all. I'm much more of this, you know, song oriented rhythm. You know, I might fake a solo, but I'm always faking it. But yeah, those two guys are sort of the core. Yeah, that's been for the past decade or so. But we always add people as needed. Like we have some songs on an album from a few albums ago. For example, that had a violin. We brought in Arwen Morgan, who was this amazing violinist out of Seattle, and also Mike Connor, who's an incredible saxophone player. So I always call people up if it's like, okay, this song needs, you know, this one thing. And then once I can figure out what that one thing is, I'll call somebody who can find, you know, how to hit the spot.
I want to bring us back around to the book. Where can people get it, and what is it about?
They can get it by going to rightsreignsupreme.com. Rein as in R-E-I-G-N, Rights Reign Supreme. And it's a work of history, an intellectual history of the Supreme Court, not to get too wonky here, but intellectual history meaning the history of ideas. So it's not just merely a legal or constitutional history. It's about what are sort of the political philosophies that informed the sort of American constitutional system that we have. And so it's a long arc history. It's only about 250 pages. It's a long arc history going from the American Revolution all the way up until literally last year. And talking about the sort of ideas that inform the idea of having this institution that is deliberately anti-democratic. And what does that mean to have that as part of our system? And it's tricky. And then and when controversial decisions happen, as have happened in recent times, and in fact, I delayed the publication of the book when the Dobbs decision happened last year. I called up my publisher. I had submitted the manuscript, and it's just like, oh, this really should be in the book. So I called up my publisher and said, we need to delay publication. I need to do some revisions and additions because this is, you know, this is a very shifting of the sands of what's going on here. And I don't want my book to come out and it's already irrelevant because the court has moved on in this way that I didn't touch on. And luckily they completely agreed, or else the book would have come out a lot sooner. But it's a tricky thing because the power of the Supreme Court to strike down laws is something that people all along the spectrum, they both champion and they criticize depending on what the decision is. I'm interested in that, it's controversial all the time. It's just controversial with different groups of people all along the way. And a lot of my historical work has had to do with that. I guest lectured to a class last week. I was asked to talk about the history of the court, particularly in the 20th century. And so it's had a lot to do with the work I do. I know this is like really sort of removed from the music stuff, but
no. But I have a question that'll attach it. So keep going.
Oh no, please go ahead.
When you're writing a book, especially a book, because I mean, if you were writing a book that was like a story and da 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 da, you know, a big epic story or something like that, I would ask. My first question would be, Do you find that the creative process is similar? But because your book is based on, you know, history and fact, is there a similarity in writing that and writing music for you? Does it sort of utilize the same part of your brain? Do you get sort of the same feeling when you're doing it, or are they just completely separate for you?
For the longest time, I thought they had nothing to do with each other because they don't really feel the same to me at all. But over time, I've recognized similarities either between performing and teaching or writing songs and writing articles or books. I think for the most part, they are rather separate worlds. But the process actually is kind of the same in that if I'm writing a song or working on an album, it does feel the same as when I was writing this book, in that you end up just getting so immersed in it that it really envelops you. And Brett, I'm sure you can attest to this, that when you're working on music, like it, you just get swallowed by it, and it kind of surrounds you, and you fall into this sort of, you can't get out of your own head in a sense. And I have problems with that in all sorts of ways. I think that's good for somebody like me who writes music and writes other things. But it's not always good on the social angle and with people, you know, people in your life who are like, you know, I'm right here. What's going on in there? I'm right here. You know, that kind of stuff, which is pretty common. But I do think that there's that that similarity of getting lost in your work, just letting it sort of wash over you and kind of almost forgetting yourself in it, being so enveloped in it.
And like the creative process of it.
Exactly. Okay.
Yeah, I think you're pretty analytical in general. So there's probably even more bleed over, like operationally, how you function, like how you process information is probably the same. What you do with it is different, but because it's your brain, you're going to process it the same. So there are going to be some aspects of creation and performance from all those areas that are going to be the same, because pretty much when you're teaching or you're playing, it's a performance and you're playing a role, mm-hmm. you know, and because of your role in your band, you're the leader. And because you're a teacher, you're the leader. So I think there's going to be some bleed over, especially operationally. Not necessarily, you know, if you sing or if you play guitar, if you use a laser pointer or PowerPoint. But I think if you break it down to the base of what it is you do, there's going to be a lot of similarities.
Well, and it may be the case that you can see it easier than I can because I'm yeah. inside of it. So it might be harder for me to notice the similarities as well. Well, one thing that another sort of connection that I see, and I've only recently realized this about myself, is that I stress out more if I have one thing in front of me I have to do. If I have 5 or 10 things, I calm down because it's like, well, I just have to do this one thing so I can do the next thing and the next and the next. But if I have one thing, I obsess over it and I can't get it out of my mind. And it took me basically my whole life to realize, oh, like pressure in that way is sort of good for me. I would rather have an album in front of me to do than a single song. I would rather have a year or a term of college to teach than one guest lecture. Because if I have that one thing, I have nothing else to think about. I can't get away from
right.
it. And I do think that in that way, I'm sort of project oriented, and that allows me to forecast things much farther into the future, whether it's an entire album or a book or something like that.
You've been out lecturing about the book. You've been making your rounds with that. Mm-hmm. Is Masonic Bloc going to start playing live? I've noticed a big influx in the bands that we've interviewed in the past, or, you know, as things have gotten a little better. Yeah. I hesitate to say they're as good as everybody likes to think they are. But are you going to be getting out now and playing? Are you going to get the guys back together? Or
yeah, we may do some shows this summer here regionally in the Pacific Northwest. That none of that's finalized yet. But sort of the way I'm looking at it is we have this new album, quote unquote. It's really an EP of mm-hmm. 5 songs. I thought it was going to be a full album. I ended up only half liking half of it. So I just, you know, the other ones will go into the vault and, you know, we'll release them someday, but they're not my favorites. But about half of it I really, really liked. I thought it was going to be kind of a mixed bag of hard rocky stuff and then some other things. It turns out I really like the rock and hard rock stuff and one of the sort of melodic instrumentals, and then the rest of it I didn't really care for. So it turned into an EP. We're going to release that this summer, and really I want to jump onto making the next full album, because that will be our 12th album. That'll be our 12th
That's awesome.
Studio album. And I feel like that's a really.
And Brent kind of hates you. Look at his face. He was like, this motherfucker right here. This motherfucker. Look at his face. Even his lip even curled until I called him on it. Now he's laughing. He was like, if you need that second guitarist for anything, you should just reach out to Brent, apparently.
So I think that would be that sort of, and if we can get not even finish that over the next year, but get really well into that, if not this summer, definitely by next summer, I'd like to do a number of shows again, because we haven't in a while. But I want to balance it out by really working on some new studio material, and then knowing that we have some of that in the can and going out and doing some summer shows. Whether that's going to be this summer or next summer is unclear at the moment. So it's going to be my, you know, our 12th album, the next one, not the one that's going to drop this summer, but the one after that we're going to work on over the next year. And that's important to me because I feel like if I do no more than that, that's a canon, right? That's a collection of work, right? If I never do anything else beyond, even though I think I will.
I'm pretty sure you will.
I probably won't know how to stop, even if I should.
I don't think you do know how to stop.
Right.
I think you get scared if you don't have enough to do. So you're like, God damn it. I'm tired of thinking about this. I'm going to do a double album this time.
Yeah. Well, we are looking at maybe doing a double album retrospective. We've never released anything on vinyl. And something that we'd like to do, it might not be for another couple of years. I hope it's not longer than that, is finally issue some stuff on vinyl and do like a double album vinyl release of a sort of a retrospective.
Can you do a live double album? That would be awesome. That would be so off the hook, dude.
You gonna pay for the manufacturing? you gonna press those records for me?
Oh my god, it's so expensive.
No, but I'll be your cheerleader. I'll be your cheerleader, though.
Yeah, so expensive. But I would love to do that. That is one of those few things that's still like never gotten there. Doing a vinyl release. And that's what I was gonna say is that that sort of round number of like the 12th studio album is also, I really believe in albums. I'm somebody who has been really influenced by bands, not just particular songs, but full albums that have really moved me. Everything from like Beatles White Album to Radiohead Kid A to, you know, Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti, you know, all sorts of stuff. I love albums. And for me, even though they're sort of out of favor or whatever, I think that they occupy a really important place in music to this day.
And there's nothing better than having an album that you can put on and listen from beginning to end. Absolutely. And take that with you, especially after like a long week or a breakup or whatever it is. And it's nice.
Something I loved that Jack White said about vinyl in particular is that you surrender yourself to the music more when you put on a record.
Yeah.
Because the record is in charge. Because you have to listen to the whole thing and then get up and flip it over and then listen to the other side. You are surrendering yourself to the music in a way that a lot of people who don't put themselves in that situation, they treat music like it's background, it's wallpaper. But by surrendering yourself and actually being secondary to the music and letting that lead the way, then there is a different experience there. And I think that is connected to the album as a work of art.
So let's jump on to the second song we're going to talk about on this recording. And then at the very end, when we're done with the episode, then we'll talk about the third one that I'll put on Patreon. Let's talk about My Love. I just want to say that I love that song. It brought me, it's like old school punk rock, man. And you said in the email, it's like a love song, but I didn't even listen to the lyrics. I was just like, yeah, like it was awesome.
I wrote that for who is now my wife, but when I wrote it initially for her, I wrote it on an acoustic guitar, and the guitar parts didn't change. Mm-hmm. But then one day I showed it to my bandmates and I was like, screw it. Let's punk it up. I played it distorted and I thought, okay, this is going to sound like a mess. And it does to some degree. But after the fact, I was like, this is really like kind of my love of the Ramones. Hard driving punk song that's also a love song, which is what I always loved about the Ramones, was the way they would marry really driving distorted guitars with these pop melodies that Joey Ramone would sing. I loved that connection of 70s punk with like a 60s pop sort of sound. I wasn't consciously going for that at the time, but after the fact, I was like, oh, that's kind of what this song is like.
Punk song, very cool. But as soon as the vocalist comes on, the vocal tone reminded me of Geddy Lee of Rush.
Really? Wow.
Now, he definitely has a higher voice.
Yeah.
But the enunciation and how it sounded, and I think it was the distortion, because I think when Geddy is on the mic, he really drives the mic with his vocals.
Yeah.
And so that's probably what I heard. But then the chorus is like so pop. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like a totally, oh man, dude, I was thinking, man, I would have loved to have mixed this song. just because it's so catchy in the chorus. And I listened to the chorus quite a few times. This was my favorite song. I kept listening to the lyrics and I could never quite make them out. So can you tell me what the lyrics are to the chorus?
Something to the effect of fear I can't make it on my own, and I don't want to walk this life alone. And that's the chorus a couple of times, and then it doubles the last couple of times where it then.
There's a statement about bone or something like that.
Yes. You warm my heart and chill me to the bone.
That's a cool line. We'll be right back. it's a good song. I mean, like I said, I would have loved to have worked with you on that mix, and we probably would have argued a lot, but it's just, you know, I mean, and now, you know, it'd be real cool to have like your mix and then yours and my mix. So, and then you release them both and see what that sounds like.
The day will come. I'm waiting to think about this more after the next 12th album, but there are songs I want to re-record eventually, and that might be one of them. So it would be interesting to do a set of recording sessions of that song in particular and send you the files, and you could mix a version, I could mix a version. I think that'd be interesting.
That would be fun. That would be really fun. And then we could play them like right next to each other, or one after the other. And that would be so cool, because I think we'd probably do a bunch of different things, which would be really awesome.
I think this sounds like a future project.
We got to do that.
It's going to happen now. Because I'll annoy the shit out of both of you.
That'd be a lot of fun. I got to give credit to Matt Stevens, the drummer on that track.
He
thinks of himself as not an intuitive player. He's very formally trained as a jazz drummer and as a rock drummer. He's technically speaking the best drummer I've ever worked with. He's phenomenal. He doesn't think of himself as a feel player, but he feels the dynamics of that song perfectly. And I think he really brought a lot out of that. Not only that, but I called that a little bit of my Bob Dylan song, in that my guitar isn't as in time. My rhythm guitar is definitely not in time in that song, especially during the verses, because we tracked the rhythm guitar and the initial vocal at the same time, which, you know, you can kind of fall out of time one way or another when you do that, especially in early takes. And I just told him, like, I'm not playing in time. Sorry. I can tell I'm not playing in time, especially from the verses into the chorus. But I know you're good enough that you can make it work and people won't even notice because you're that good. And he did. He somehow knew that, like, it jumps from the verse to the chorus maybe like a quarter of a beat too soon. And he just anticipated that and he made it work. A lot of drummers wouldn't know how to do that.
Tell everybody where they can find you, where they can purchase your music, all that good stuff.
MasonicBlock.com. And I nearly forgot until you just reminded me that 19 of our instrumentals are available for free download right now. It's the first time we've released any sort of retrospective at all. During my book signing, I wanted to play some of our original music. I thought, so it wasn't too distracting, I would pick some of our instrumentals. It ended up being 19 of them. I thought, well, we'll make these 19 songs available for free on the website. And so anybody can go to MasonicBlock.com right now, go to the music page. It's the very top album on the page, and you can download it for free, individual songs or the entire album of 19 songs. And we're going to leave that open until at least the new album is released later this summer. So
that's really cool.
Yeah, I've been wanting to do that for a long time. Also, return to MasonicBlock.com mid to late summer, because that's when the new album EP, five-song album, which is a very short album of five songs with a very long title, which is Your Heroes Will Let You Down. That's when you learn from them the most. And that will drop on the website in July or August. We're not sure when. So keep going back to MasonicBlock.com to check out the free music right now. And then when the new album comes out, and then go to RightsReignSupreme.com to check out my new book.
Yes.
Oh, and go to HistoryKillers.substack.com if you want to keep up with, I'm always issuing new writing, new articles, at least twice a month.
James, I want to thank you so much for coming back on the show and working with us. I know we keep like missing each other. I think both sides of this are just super busy.
Yeah.
So
I'm glad it worked out. I always love talking to you, too.
And we have to have you on again when you drop the 12 or the live or whatever you do first.
Okay. Absolutely. I would love that.
We love talking.
There are certain people that we interview that I love talking to more than
others.
You
know, we're at an hour and 41 minutes.
I know. I'm sorry.
Everybody,
thanks for coming to the show.
Thanks for joining us. We know that was a longer episode, But we just really love having him on. He's great. He's so fun to talk to.
Yes.
And he's so well spoken. Yes. And he's so musically prolific. Yes. That I'm a little jealous. So, and that's it. I'm tired. I don't.
That's all we got. So, please listen to us when you listen to us.
And if you did last week, you'll notice that the Patreon is different. You'll notice that there was extra content from the Trashy Annie interview, and there will be extra content and extra song from this interview. So please make sure. We're not begging because we know not a lot of people can afford it. For the love of God, gas is $3.50 something a gallon. But if you can, please join our Patreon. Also, our shop's description is in the link below. And I have nothing else to say. I just want to crawl into bed.
So just remember to make some.